Today on Rockin' the Suburbs.
Patrick, I have a surprise for you.
Oh, excellent. I love surprises.
I figured, you know, with all the hard work you've been doing, maybe I should get you a gift.
Oh, wow. Where is it?
It's parked outside. A little red Corvette.
What?
All right, we're Thursday on Prince Week. We are well into the top 10 now. You're going to hear favorite songs 6, 5, and 4 on today's episode. This is where it gets really tough, man. You know, this is where it's like, what is it going to be? Which songs are going to make the final countdown here?
Yep. And if you placed your bets correctly on you know, several betting sites for that correct top 10 in order, it's just like the Kentucky Derby. You gotta win, place, and show. You'll really start to be nervous.
That's right. Okay, so again, real quickly, we did the countdown. It was a listener vote. We compiled the top 15. We held a virtual event where people could come and respond to the countdown reveal in real time, and so it was really fun. It was a super fun night.
It really was great. Thanks to everybody who came and helped us get such a great recording and followed the rules of the recording, different from our Friday Night Hootenanny, which is kind of wild and hanging out there. Everybody did a great job of saving their comments and not talking over each other. We want to thank all of our community for really making this special.
It worked out really, really great. So
yep.
A lot more fun than just listening to the two of us.
Yeah.
Talk totally. On it.
I mean, a lot more fun than just us talking about it.
That's right. There you go. All right. but we are Rockin' the Suburbs. I'm Jim Lenihan.
And I'm Patrick Foster.
And we also had a guest, Cricket, who joined us for this recording.
Thanks, Jiminy.
Okay. Let's move on to number 6. The thing about Little Red Corvette, I gotta say this, and I was texting you about this earlier in the week, Patrick, about this song in particular. You know how you and I come from an era growing up and becoming music fans and music appreciators and all of that, where it's sort of like you become kind of jaded and you don't want to like the things that are popular, and you think everything that's, you know, mainstream is sort of like that because it's, you know, dumbed down or whatever, and, you know, we're so much cooler than everybody else and so on and so forth, right? I mean, I think all that's been disproved, you know, multiple times over, but nevertheless, what I'm going to say is sometimes something is popular because it's goddamn good. I think that's the case here with this song. This song is so good. I love the way it sort of, you know, it's quiet, it's kind of groovy, kind of slinky, you know, and then it moves into a different mood, and the chorus is so hooky, and you can't help it. Everything about this is really, it's so well done, and it's a car song, but it's not really, you know, it's the, about it is, it. So in that way, it sort of like harkens back to like the old days of rock and roll, you know, in that sense. And it's everything about it is so cool. It's just so cool. I think that's the best description for this song.
Well, and I'm gonna quote what Harris wrote on his ballad, the ultimate live for the moment song of youth, no matter what the consequences might be. So I think that says it a lot too. And I want to call on Bud Verge. Bud said in the chat, influenced Stevie Nicks' Stand Back.
Yeah, she's told it in a couple of interviews where she was driving up the California coast one day and she heard, you know, Little Red Corvette on the radio, and she just loved the synth feel of it, that she had to pull over on the side of the road and like buy a tape recorder and some cassettes, and she actually wrote the tune Stand Back, you know, Stand Back, yeah. Stand Back. You listen to that song now, all you hear is Little Red Corvette. But, you know, kind of another story to that is Prince eventually came in and played the keyboards on Stand Back. It's not credited on a record, but he's playing the keys on that song. So we were talking about how, you know, Prince influenced other artists. I mean, Stevie Nicks was a pretty big artist in, you know, 82, 83, 84. That's, you know, it's about as influential as you can get.
Yeah, totally. I mean, yeah, Rumors sold a few copies. That's amazing, actually. I think it's fascinating. I mean, not only influencing upcoming and younger bands, but influencing older artists as well. That's how big this man was. And I mean, it's one of those songs that's like, I don't know, to me, it's almost like, you know, sometimes when you have a hangover or a headache and you're like, oh, here are the things I can rely on to like get through the day or get through the next 2 hours. It's like Little Red Corvette. When you listen to it, like it just pushes certain buttons neurologically,
right,
that make you feel good. Yeah, you're right.
This was Prince's first top 10 hit. Did you know that?
I did not.
So when we talk
that.
About sort of wow. like this was the album that really propelled him. This was it. And I love this album too. And I love this song. And I remember this on MTV and all of that, because it's like, this is like sort of like the moment right before he became the megastar, right?
Right. Totally.
He was becoming a big star, obviously.
Yeah.
But then like, this was right before Purple Rain. And,
right.
And
right.
There's something where it I don't know how it almost makes it a little bit more relatable in some way. Like you feel this is true. A guy still, you know, kind of trying, pushing himself
right.
and doing
yeah,
all that.
It's
right.
The culmination of all that hard work and his dream and his vision. Yeah.
Yeah.
Totally. But it's also the reason I asked about the MTV timeline, because part of the popularity of these things was MTV. MTV made some songs bigger. And I do wonder,
absolutely.
You know, had MTV been around in his earlier albums, would he have been as big sooner?
Right.
We'll never know.
Right. Possibly.
Right. Right. Very, very interesting point. Yeah. Would some of that content, or would he have written songs differently? You know, because I think also some of the videos he made, and obviously he broke into motion pictures and obviously had a visual. I mean, we heard Ricky say it, right? He always had a picture in his mind of like what the song was going to be. So it's a really interesting point. I mean, you know, for McKenzie's generation and everybody, it's hard to explain how important MTV was and how little there was to watch back in the 80s that was new and fresh. Man, you couldn't refresh your feed back then. And, you know, it was totally different. Yeah.
Bud Verge says MTV moved music out of the cities and into the suburbs. And I do there think there's something to that. I don't necessarily want to go too deep into this. This would take a lot more thought and research. But it's sort of like, where do you... Without MTV, where would you even program a guy like
right.
Prince
right.
in terms of like radio formats,
totally.
The way they were back then?
Totally.
And MTV brought him to the masses in some way that maybe radio wouldn't have.
Right.
Okay. Ed Bowser is our second
yes.
special guest tonight. You've heard from him a little bit, but now we're going to go a little bit deeper on the Ed Bowser experience. So,
right.
Ed Bowser, welcome. I've known Ed for a long time, many, many years, and we used to work together back in Louisville at the newspaper there. But in the interim, he's done many great things. And one of those things is he founded a website called Soul in Stereo, and they
yeah.
write about all this stuff and talk about all this stuff. And Ed, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Jim. Yes, and Soul in Stereo was started out as like a little passion project, because my days when I was working with you, I was an editor. I wasn't a writer, and I just wanted to flex my writing skills and do what we're doing here tonight, just talk about the music that we love, and it kind of shaped me, and it kind of started out on the site and grew into Facebook groups and podcasts, and it's a pretty cool experience.
So tell us a little bit about this photo that we're looking at on the Zoom here. What is this for the people who are listening audio only?
Well, yes, this is me as Prince, and I don't know, I can't even remember what year this is. When I moved here to Birmingham in 2009, I never dressed up for Halloween, like even going back and dressed up since like the trick-or-treat days. But at some point, I was somewhere, and there was a costume contest, and I dressed like Michael Jackson. It was like a huge hit. So every year, I always like, well, I got to top that, and I got to top that. So it become this thing where I can't even keep up. And one year, I decided to do my Prince thing. I couldn't find the actual Prince hair from that era, so I had to rock the Rick James look. It worked. It's fine. So that's what we got here.
Yeah, so it's a photo of Ed dressed up for Halloween one year as Prince. It's really great. It's got the purple and holding the guitar. It's got the wig. It's really awesome.
And let me tell you guys how far Jim and Ed go back. Ed appeared on episode, you're not going to believe this, folks, 6 of Rockin' the Suburbs.
Is that right? 6.
Episode 6. He's one of the original 10. And I've been following Soul and Stereo ever since then. It's been on my bookmarks, yeah. and they do an amazing job. So if you guys want to understand, you know, how hard it is to keep up with all the music in the world and get some really good recommendations, that's a great, great thing to bookmark and follow.
So it's really cool.
I appreciate it.
So let's talk, Ed, a little bit about your relationship with Prince. When did you get into Prince? You're a little bit younger than I am. So when did he come on your radar?
Well, see, this is kind of a funny story because growing up in the 80s, I'm an 80s baby, you had to choose. So either you were a Michael Jackson fan or you were a Prince fan. In my high school, you couldn't be both. You had to choose. Later on, it was Brandy and Monica, and then it was Nas and Jay-Z. You had to choose. You could not like both. So I was a Michael Jackson guy, and I knew the Prince singles. You know, I knew the Purple Rain. I knew that stuff. But I really didn't dig deep into the catalog. Well, there were really two things. My wife, as I mentioned before, huge Prince fan. So that was like maybe mid-2000s before I really dug into it. But the earlier time where I really got into Prince, I can't believe I'm bringing up Batman again, but here we go. It's the 1989 Batman movie. And if you're a fan of that movie, you know Prince did that whole soundtrack. And, I mean, he was all over it. And there were just so many iconic scenes. That Batman movie was the first, one of the first movies that was like a big VHS release. Hmm. So back then, y'all, for those who don't know, VHSs were like $100. But this tape was like $20, and my aunt gave it to me for Christmas. And my brother and I wore that thing out. We watched it 2 or 3 times a day. I can still recite the lines. And there was so much Prince in that movie, whether it was the Joker tearing up the museum, crazy parade, and he's like danced around like an idiot. But the song that struck me the most was at the final, at the end credits, they played Scandalous. I don't know what was up with Prince's voice on that song. It sounded like he had laryngitis, but it was just something striking about the raspiness there. Mm. And I knew Prince, and of course he was, I knew all of his stuff. I knew his big singles, but there was something about Scandalous and the way he sounded so raspy and different that drew me in. So that was kind of the first time where I saw him as more than just that guy that sang Purple Rain. It's something different about him. And then, you know, I got into the Gold Experience album, as we talked about later. And then in the mid-2000s, I really dug back into some of the stuff that I have come to love, like the Diamonds and Pearls album and things like that. So my journey has been up and down, but I'm definitely a fan.
Where would you put Prince right now in terms of your favorite artists?
Oh, I mean, easily top 10. We talked a little bit earlier about how diverse he is. So even though a lot of the things that I enjoy the most for my fandom of music is mostly soul, R&B, and hip-hop, Prince has been able to just incorporate little bits and pieces of that. But not only that, then sometimes he'll do the deep dive. So when I heard a song for the first time, like Diamonds and Pearls, and shout out to Rosie Gaines doing her thing, and that soulfulness on it, it just is like, oh, he can do this? But then he can also do a song that sounds like a surfer song from the Batman TV show. And his creativity and diversity is something that's always been just so intriguing to me. From that rasp on the end of the Batman VHS to rapping, like in those later albums, where he was actually doing straight up rap. like, this dude can do it all. And we haven't even talked about the guitar skills. So
yeah, that's true.
Really, right? Just a one of once in a lifetime talent.
Talk about that a little bit, Ed, if you wouldn't mind, about his guitar playing. I mean, I think it's amazing.
One of my biggest regrets, I have never seen him live. My wife saw him, I can't remember, maybe it was when she was living on the West Coast, she went to see him. And she said, oh, I wish I could see it. He was literally, the guitar was on the floor, she tells me. It was on the floor. And he was just somehow playing while the guitar was laying on the floor. She called me after. I'm like, what? That doesn't sound real. You know? But it was real. I just cannot believe. To me, he's, I wouldn't, top two? I think I will say top two.
Wow.
Guitarists of all time.
Yeah.
I'm saying top two.
And when you go back in the 60s and 70s, too, that kind of, you know, I don't know if you call it flourish or minimal, you know, it, you could play a just a very laid out kind of a, you know, rhythm style. And all of a sudden, when you get your break, you go in there and you play, right? And that's something that you can hear in a lot of R&B records. But Prince did that, too. But when he played a solo, it was, like you said, it was so flashy, right? It was so much more ornate.
Every time he had that solo, even now, I mean, there's songs that I'm sure will be coming up soon on his countdown. You know when that comes in,
right?
That's always our favorite part because he steals a show of that every time.
Right.
I kind of miss it. We don't hear as much.
You're exactly right. Yeah, people don't take those chances anymore to like do that kind of thing.
Right. Yeah. I need that break where it's just like unexpected.
Yep. Yep. Just over the top, and I'm going to fit it into this, you know, kind of compact tune. Yeah.
So the thing I want to ask Ed is, because Ed is really on top of like current music,
yep,
current, you know, R&B and soul, is what would you say in terms of the influence factor? Is how big is Prince's influence on musicians today?
Incredibly. And now, you know, there are different moments. If you're only into kind of like what's going on in the mainstream and you're just listening to, like, I don't even want to say radio because that's such a weird space right
now. Yeah. Yeah.
Right. If you're listening to just mainstream artists that are all up and down your timeline, you're probably not going to hear too many blatant influences. But if you listen to like a Janelle Monáe, I mean, she's like baby Prince.
Right.
You hear even some R&B artists like Roe James. There are lots of artists, especially coming up right now, that have been very much studied and tutored the Prince we know and love, because you just hear those notes and you hear those guitar licks and the way even the songs are structured. You're like, oh, this sounds like a Prince song. And then you
that's right,
listen to the interviews and he's like, oh, he's such a huge inspiration from Janelle's like stage presence to a lot of even some of the Daniel Caesar, some of the like very soulful guys, the way that they structure their songs, you can very much tell who their influence is. So even though you don't see it in the mainstream, it's definitely there.
Is there anyone, Ed, that you would equate nowadays or working or, you know, I don't know, even in the middle of their career that is Prince-like or has that kind of vision?
Oh, as I said earlier, Janelle Monáe. Check out her last album, Dirty Computer. I mean, she's singing about vaginas. Like, that's Prince all day. She's got a video and she's like dressed as one. It's ridiculous, but you can picture Prince was here in 2020.
Yeah,
but she has she has great musical creativity too. And it's all the
my kids all the, love Janelle Monáe. Yep. I mean, that's one of their favorites.
Yep. She's blending like politics and music, and it's
it's
wonderful.
It's great. Now let me ask you this one last thing here, Ed, about Prince as an actor, because it sounds like you're into movies. So I read on Soul and Stereo that your wife is a huge fan of Under the Cherry Moon.
Oh, boy.
Right?
Because it's so bad, it's good.
Is that the deal?
You're half right. She loves, I have seen that movie. And she will yell at me. Probably she'll come in the room and be like, you haven't seen that movie but 17 times. No, I'm like, oh, yeah, I've seen it many times. That movie's not the best. Prince is not the best actor, but there's still a presence about him.
Without a doubt, yeah.
Even though I cannot stand Under the Cherry Moon, to this day, we will still do the one of our Sam Cooke album. We throw that around all the time. That's great. So even though he doesn't have the chops, I mean, the kid is kind of a horrible person, if you want to be real with it. Like, he's not the best actor.
Right.
But there's just such a presence about Prince that makes him the star no matter what.
Totally agree. And it's worth a watch if you guys haven't seen it, just for the, you know, the historical value. Kristen Scott Thomas is sort of the alluring character in that movie. So it's definitely worth watching. But, man, you got to admire the ambition of trying to pull that off. Like, I mean, that's amazing. Maybe you should stay away from directing movies, Prince. But, man.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Everyone. Round of applause for Ed Bowser, everyone. Yes. Can't hear it because they're all on mute, but thank you very much. Okay, we're up to number 5, Patrick.
Okay.
All right, there we go. Purple Rain, the title track from the album.
Purple and Rain.
Of the same name.
Mm-hmm.
It's interesting this comes up now because we just talked with Ed about the guitar playing. You didn't hear it there, but of course, the end of that song, amazing guitar soloing happening there. And I think that was one of the kind of like his maybe secret weapons, not so secret weapons, you know, that he could win over a lot of fans with that guitar playing, I think. You know, a lot of people who maybe otherwise might not be so into, you know, R&B kind of music, but when he would play that guitar, you're just like, oh, I'm in now, right?
Totally. And interesting, Gerald mentioned in the chat, seeing him do this on the piano and mic tour was awesome. Gerald, talk about, he did a whole tour, right, where he just played piano and sang a lot of his songs.
Yeah, shortly before he died, I saw him 2 weeks before he died. The tour was going around and tickets were going on sale like the day before the show or 2 days before the show, and you were in and that was it. Like, there was no long buildup like most tours nowadays. And it was just Prince, a piano microphone, no cameras, as we've been discussing a lot on the chat tonight, even in Paisley Park. Jody said there's no cameras allowed. But it was him. He just sat down and it was a totally different vibe for a Prince show. He really showed his vocal range and his vocal talent, and obviously his piano skills, and the environment was more intimate than a typical Prince concert, which is more of a celebration. This is more of an intimate gathering of fans and just a celebration of him. And like I said, 2 weeks later, he was gone, and it was just a shock.
Amazing that a song like that too could translate so many years later and so well. This song, I mean, it's like a Elton John ballad in some ways. It's got the piano and it can still work that way, but also is it about a sunset? Is it about rain? Is it supposed to be about love? Is it supposed to be about some feeling that you get when a certain thing happens? I don't know, but it struck a universal chord, and he embraced it, and Purple became his thing, from here on out.
To me, it's a love song. I mean, that line, it's such a shame our friendship had to end.
Yeah.
You know, it's a love song.
Yeah. It also has some great sort of like gospel sounding elements overtones. To it. I love when he sort of like really gets into the song and that, you know, he's sort of just breaking it down, you know what I mean? And kind of James Brown influence in some ways too, I think. Just vocally, I think it's some of his best work as well. Very emotional. You can really, you can feel his emotions in the song.
Yeah. And Kevin Clement just wrote in the chat, I had this song on loop the day he died. It was very cathartic for me. That's really interesting, too. I mean, when you think about what he means to you and what his art and work meant to you, you know, this might be one of those songs that, you know, would be the Prince song for many people. So, and obviously number five. So it made it on a lot of votes.
Yes.
You know, on our countdown.
It's a great late night kind of song.
Oh, without a doubt.
You know, back in the days when you would gather and have parties, right?
Yeah.
You put this on late at night and everybody would really get into it and
totally,
sort of sway back and forth and, you know,
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And the movie, I went to see that a few times in the theater. It was excellent.
Oh, absolutely. Any other thoughts out there from the audience on Purple Rain?
Jim, I'm just going to say one thing is that I don't know if you saw the chat when this came in at five. My eyes kind of lit up when I saw it come in at five.
Too low, huh?
It's slightly low, I think, and the chat was talking about that. So if this podcast couldn't get any better, it just got very, very because I'm really interested in the next four. I think I'm pretty sure about two of the four.
Okay.
This really got very interesting now. The drama really got cranked up here. So,
All right.
That's where we're headed. Number four, coming up. Yep.
Should we do it right now?
Yeah, let's do it.
I can't wait to see what these four are.
All right, number four is Let's Go Crazy. All right.
Not
I got
all
such
at
a
once.
Reaction. There we go. That's right. All right, Let's Go Crazy. I mean, there's so much in that song. There's so much in that song. I mean, we didn't play the whole intro to the song. And it starts that kind of like funeral elegy, you know, eulogy kind of thing, right?
Well,
and the organ and all that kind of stuff, and it's just like such a like a build, and you can't wait for it to get started. Yep. Then it gets started and it doesn't disappoint, right?
Well, I'll quote here from Mark Neese, who wrote a bunch of nice comments. His comment here on Let's Go Crazy is great. He says, dancing to it at evening dances at sleepaway summer camp in the summer of 84, when the opening faux sermon started, the anticipation amongst us hormonal teenagers was off the chart. Obviously that revved a lot of people up, Jim.
I remember this being just a huge radio hit back in the day, man.
Yeah.
Like you'd just be driving around and this song would come on the radio like all the time.
Well, and I'll talk about this very briefly when I quickly go through my top 10, but you know, this album was so ubiquitous in the summer of 84. If you were a hormonal teenager like me and Mark Neese, even though I never knew him at the time, it was just everywhere. And it expressed your emotions and your feelings. Like, you know, it helped you translate what your life was like. And that's what the highest art does. And, you know, thank God it was 1984 and it was Purple Rain, man. That was pretty cool. I embraced it. I always thought it was one of a tricky pieces of art that is so popular yet also so great, and you don't know how to react to it sometimes. But I think for the most part, you have to shred the popularity and deal with how great the art was.
Yep. All right. So I want to open this up to the audience. If anybody wants to discuss Let's Go Crazy, but there's two quick things I'm going to say while you unmute yourselves. Number one, the B-side to this was Erotic City. let's just mention that real quick.
Yeah, we will.
Great song. And Also, I learned something new today about this song that I was mishearing a lyric.
Really?
And
rock and roll all these night years, and probably every day?
No. Well, there's that. All these years later, the part about are we going to let the elevator bring us down, right? It's actually de-elevator. Did you know this?
I didn't.
Are we going to let de-elevator, which is a reference to Satan.
What?
Is my understanding.
I think I never knew this.
I read this in multiple sources today.
Wow.
That it's actually, that's like a, are we going to let de-elevator bring us down, which is a reference to Satan, which again gets into the spiritual content of the song, which of course, if you think about the beginning of the song, the dearly beloved, we are gathered here today and all of this stuff.
Right.
And it's, and again, it goes to that idea of like, this kind of like heaven and hell thing, like we're going to party, we're going to, are we going to pay for it? What, you know, are we going to reject that? All of that kind of stuff. So
that's
apparently a term, de-elevator.
Wow. Breaking news.
Yeah, this is breaking news. I'll agree with that. And makes sense. I mean, I don't know. I always thought of Purple Rain in some ways is kind of like a wedding album, because if you look at the movie, I think Prince wants to commit himself, but doesn't want to give up his freedom. And maybe that goes with what you're saying, Jim, you know, commitment to a higher power, but also you still want to sin as much as you can.
Yeah. All right. Any thoughts? Any thoughts from the crowd?
Let me turn up the crickets. Crazy.
Yeah. Yeah. I'll say that it wasn't just hormonal teenagers. This was a dance party song at colleges and in college bars at the time. It fit right in with, you know, like a London Calling or whatever, when we would have, we would play all kinds of music. I mean, this fit right in at college. The other thing is, I think Erotic City is an even better song personally. And on my list, it's above this. We'll see if it actually shows up in the next 20 minutes.
Love Erotic City.
I think it just shows that, you know, Prince's versatility. Anyway, that's what I wanted to say about the song.
All right. Jim Petrillo, what were you going to say?
Oh, no, Enrique had a question that caught my eye. That sound. Does anybody know how he makes that sound? Is it just some setting on the keyboard, that weird, like, that weird percussive sound that only, for some reason, only he used it, but it was so distinctive.
Yeah.
Completely. Yeah. That, I mean, he totally invented that kind of percussion sound. Somehow he got it, and I don't know how he did. Yeah.
All right, and as I said, we're going to cut this off before we get to the top three.
That's right.
Our thanks to Ed Bowser for
thanks, Ed,
talking with us. What a great man. And
awesome dude.
And also, I want to let people know that if you have any comments on Prince yourself, any remembrances or songs that you particularly like, then you can call and you can leave a message and we'll put your voice on an upcoming episode. We'll revisit this topic, I'm sure. The number is
612-440-1984.
Or you can email rock@suburbspod.com or find us on the socials. The handle is suburbspod. And you can find us on Facebook and Twitter and Instagram. All right. And you'll have to compete with all those people who are commenting on Kiss as well.
That's right.
So
yeah,
a lot of that happened
over there. Yeah.
Not Kiss the song, Kiss the band. Yeah.
That's right.
Okay. Tomorrow, the top three. I can hardly wait.
Yeah. It's going
to
be great.
I got to go to bed early. So, you know, time will just move faster, right? Like a Christmas Eve situation. Right.
One more sleep till the top three.
That's right. All right. It's Rock in the Suburbs. I'm Jim Linehan.
I'm Patrick Foster.
We'll talk to you guys tomorrow.
To be able to get somebody to pay you to make a movie, that's incredible. Like a major motion picture, right? I know. Yeah.